But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here broadcasting to all you food crazies out there. Also joined by co-host and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. And from myself and all our listeners, a happy belated birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I had a bunch of well wishes from Facebook. You know, I have a bunch of Facebook friends. I think I have 5,000 Facebook friends, and I think I know 15 of them, you know. But it's all well-meaning, and everybody, you know, signed on, wished me a happy birthday, so it was all appreciated. And now I have to get back to the business of growing old and try to reverse the aging process somehow, you know. They say diet and exercise. I don't buy it, but we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
I like the way you just described, you know, you have 5,000 friends on Facebook, and you know 15 of them, because it reminds me of one of the stories that you tell, and I always used to give the flavor of your book, Playing with Fire, that somebody comes into your restaurant and they're not satisfied with something, the seating area or something, and they start going off saying, you know, I know Tom Shortell, and he wouldn't stand for this.
Oh, yeah. No, I had somebody threaten to fire me. He was going to call me. He was going to call me and have me fire me. It was the Reader's Digest version is a guy who wanted to – it was a Montauk, and, you know, Montauk can be a – you know, an interesting place. In the summer, nobody goes out to eat till like 7:30, 8 o'clock because everybody's at the beach or fishing or playing golf, you know, outdoor activities in the summer. So this guy came into what was, in essence, a completely empty restaurant. I had about 300 reservations, but they weren't starting till like 7 o'clock. So it was like 6:30 or something. He came in. He wanted to sit at a table of four because he was a big guy. And the hostess was trying to explain to him that, you know, we needed the table. And he says, it's ridiculous. You don't look that busy to me. There's nobody here, yada, yada. So they go back to the hostess desk and arguing about it. And I had come out to the desk to check on the reservation schedule, see what was going on. So I said, what seems to be the problem? So the guy says, well, you know, she's trying to sit me at the table for two. I'm a big guy. I'm not going to be comfortable there. I want to sit at the table for four. I said, sir, I can't give you a table for four. You're two people, you know. I said, essentially what we have here is a real estate transaction. You know, I'm selling square footage. It's Montauk in August, right? It just happens to come with a meal. So if you want to sit at a bigger table, come back in November, and I can give you a table for 11 if you'd like. You know what I mean? I mean, nobody here. So he looks at me, and he goes, Ted straight face. He goes, listen, pal, I know Tom Shortell, and when I tell him what's going on, your heads are going to roll. So the hostess looks at me and looks at him and then runs inside laughing, leaves me with this maniac, right? And I said, you know, Tom, 20 years we go back. He's given me the whole history of the relationship, you know. And when I call him, you're on the line, you know, the whole thing. I said, well, all right, sit where you want. I didn't know what to say, you know. I said, she came out and she goes, why didn't you tell him? I said, he said he was going to, you know, you knew me, he was going to call me and have me fire me. It's a lot to get down, you know what I mean? I couldn't process it quick enough, you know.
That's a funny story. So, you know, again, in the theme of birthdays, the studios here in Farmingdale, I was invited to meet up with some people a couple of weeks ago on Main Street Farmingdale and have a drink with them. And it was a Friday, and it was a couple things I had to get done before I left the office and studios. And when I got to where everybody had met up, there was, I guess there was four of them, and they were sitting at the bar, and it's partitioned off. There's like separation between the different groupings.
Right.
So I was the fifth wheel, and I was standing, and they explained to me that I, you know, to follow guidelines and ordinances, I couldn't be standing at the bar. I had to be seated. And it was so complicated because there was another couple sitting next to our group, and then the rest of the bar was open. But I just didn't have it within me to ask the other people to move and then move the barrier.
Yeah.
And so now understand there's four of us in one group, then there's the other two at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the restaurant is empty.
Right.
Many tables. So I go over to the hostess and I said, we actually have some more people that would join us if we could get a table. And like something like, and I point to the corner. And it because it was a table for probably six or eight, so it was perfect. And the hostess looks and she goes, well, we have a reservation coming in at 7 o'clock, so you only can have it for like an hour. I said, okay, you know, well, what about that table? I pointed to the other corner. Yeah, no, that's not available either. And it in logic, it seemed ridiculous.
Sure.
But I do appreciate what you're saying that, again, if you have reservations, you can't disappoint those.
Sure.
But at the same time, we agreed. So by the time we sat down, we had 55 minutes. And it was funny because when the rest of our group got there, they said, do you want to get something to eat? I said,
it's no time.
We only got 47 minutes at this point.
Countdown's
but
on.
Then we're sitting there, and I see Butch Starkey, who's the former mayor of Farmingdale and was my landlord, walks in with his wife, and he's asking if he can get a table to sit down and have dinner with his wife. And they said, no, sorry, we're all sold out. And again, the only people sitting were us.
Yeah, you know,
it's frustrating.
Reservations are a really difficult dance, you know. I mean, people, we live in a society now where it's instant gratification. If you wait 30 seconds for something, you're automatically homicidal, you know. And it's difficult because, you know, I don't know how long you're going to take to eat. You know, so the rule of thumb is, you know, a deuce is about an hour and a half, a four tops about 2 hours, and six tops about 2.5, you know. But that's not an exact science, you know, as Dr. Fauci would say. I'm not getting political. I promise that listener I wouldn't do that. But, you know, it's the whole thing to me with the restaurants is gone off the rails because it's like, you know, apparently it's very dangerous to walk to and from your table. But it's fine once you're sitting. So this disease is smart. It actually knows when you're eating, and it knows when you walk into the bathroom. Because that's when it's going to get you on a bathroom walk. You know what I mean? You have to put your mask back on. But once you sit down, you don't have to have your mask on, whether you're at the bar or the dining room. So the whole thing to me, you know, they say follow the science. But nobody's really following the science. It's follow the politics is really what's going on.
It's complicated. There's no question. And again, there's so much we could talk about relative to the inconsistencies.
We're not allowed to, though.
But we shouldn't. We're here to talk about food.
Well, anyway, you know, you're talking about my book, The Playing with Fire book, and that was published in 2009, believe it or not. It's like 11 years already or whatever the heck that is. 12 years, I guess, now. But I just sent my second book to the editor, and it's being edited as we speak. So hopefully I'm going to have that out in the next few months. And I don't know if I'm going to do a hardcover this time because the world's changed since I published my last book. You know, people aren't buying those so much anymore. There's Kindle and ebooks and, you know, all kinds of other ways to get, you know, your book sold, you know.
Well, it is complicated. I mean, we were supposed to have a guest on last week and it didn't really come together.
To say the least.
But he will be coming, Miles Cohasi. But in his press release, it said something that blew my mind. It said, you know, selling well on Amazon. Now, in the day, it was, you know, to be on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah. I never made that monumental leap. I mean, I sold a bunch of books on Amazon, you know. And Amazon publishes your book now, and they don't even charge you for it. There's a way of getting it on. I got to talk to my editor. She knows better than I do about that stuff. That's why we have her. But yeah, it's changed tremendously. You know, I printed 5,000 books, hardcover books, you know, and, you know, we thankfully sold all of those. But, you know, I can see that, you know, you pick a number in your head and, you know, you're saying, all right, how many am I going to sell? And, you know, and you know, especially when you self-publish, you know, and what if you don't, you know? I mean, after your friends and family, you know, how do you get rid of the other 4,000 in your garage, you know? So I was lucky. I had outlets, you know. I have a radio show. I have restaurants I could sell them through. I have vineyards out east that, you know.
Well, I've seen them at the vineyards. At the one that changed hands, it was owned by the Entenmann family.
Yeah, Martha Clara.
Martha Clara. They had a nice gift shop, and your book was there. And even on the expressway, there's the Long Island Tourist Center, mm-hmm. and they have your book there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice to see it. It's funny. We get requests all the time for people to get a free copy of your book, and
yeah.
We don't even have anything to give away anymore.
Well, it's out of print right now. I mean, I didn't sign up for a new printing, you know, with Amazon. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, sometimes when you produce a new one, there's calls for the older one. If people read the new one, hadn't read the one before, I think that was the case with Angels and Demons, and what was that guy's name? I can't think who wrote the book about the Vatican and that big mystery. And it was a movie. Tom Cruise was in, I think. It was a famous book.
The Da Vinci?
Da Vinci Code, yeah. And so, you know, his first book, Angels and Demons, I read both of them. I thought they were both very good. But there was a big holler for, Angels and Demons after Da Vinci Code came out because people figured they missed a good one, you know. And so hopefully that'll happen. We'll see. We'll see what happens, you know.
So again, behind the scenes here at the radio station, today is actually Friday. We're broadcasting to our audience Sunday mornings. But it is Friday morning, and when you came into this to meet up with me this morning, I was in the middle of reading Newsday, and I didn't get to finish this article. But I thought you, as a man of the world, would be able to, tell me what it's all about. So apparently, J. Rod has announced that him and J. Lo are better off as friends.
Jeez, I'm heartbroken.
So what? I wonder what their relationship is differently. Being friends or being romantically linked.
If you don't know the difference by now, Stu, I'm really worried about you.
Does that mean they're going to be friends with benefits?
I don't know. I don't want to get into that. I'll get yelled at by our listeners. You know, I can't do politics. I'm certainly not doing sex. So I'm not doing. What's that little short lady, doctor? Somebody,
Dr. Ruth.
Ruth, yeah, Ruth Westheimer or something.
Yes.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. Maybe one of the funniest things I ever saw, and I don't want to, pile on Dr. Ruth, but she, if I saw her in the street, I wouldn't think sex therapist, I would think, Grandma Baker, meatball maker, whatever. Sex therapist wouldn't come into my top 10 things if I had to guess what she did for a living.
So as we will get into talking about food, it's been
point next month.
It's been a very interesting week, though, as far as the pandemic and sort of returning to normalcy.
Yeah.
One of the things that happened is the county executive has written to the governor asking to open up the Coliseum to larger crowds. Safe, but in a larger manner than what it is now.
Yeah.
A couple of concerts have been announced, actually. One in an indoor venue at Westbury Music Fair. Engelbert Humperdinck, 86 years old.
My mother's the biggest fan.
And his wife passed away from COVID in February.
Really?
And yet he's willing to go out there and do his thing. And then at Jones Beach, one of the shows that had been previously booked last year but had been moved around, a country star, Thomas Rhett, has been announced for the end of August.
Hmm.
And at the same time, those are optimistic things. But yet Steely Dan and Stevie Winwood show apparently has been moved to next year.
Really? It's funny, Engelbert Humperdinck. My mother was the biggest Engelbert fan. She was she used to go see him all the time at the music fair when it was still called the music fair. And I remember her leaving. She was like in her 60s at the time, and her and the girls, it was like the Golden Girls, They were going to see Engelbert. I'm like, please don't throw any underwear at him, all right? Because,
they did that. I guess Tom Jones was more known for that, but yes.
I know, but it's different when a 20-year-old throws a thong, and a 70-year-old throws a bloomer, You know the difference between thongs and bloomers?
No.
Well, a thong. See, I'm really worried about you, Stu. A thong, fits in the palm of your hand, and a bloomer is about a half an acre. You know what I mean? So it's like, I see you coming on stage.
You can explain it so well.
I'm an expert on underwear.
So we were just talking about Westbury Music Fair, and we've been having a lot of interaction with our audience. So much so that even during the broadcast of the show, we're receiving emails, which is very, very much exciting.
Yeah, it is.
And the email address is fire@whli.com. fire@whli.com. And just in response to you talking about Westbury Music Fair with me, would our listeners send us a note about iconic venues, mm-hmm, or just places of interest that might have disappeared from Long Island over the past 20, 30 years.
Oh, yeah. I see that on the internet all the time. They have these nostalgic, you know, little film clips of things, Gimbals and, you know, and stores like that that, you know, aren't around anymore. You know, Sears, A&S, Strauss. And
well, real quick, this is unprompted, but in Call Place, where you grew up, what might not be there or what is there now that...
Well, Mason Mint, you know, talking about food, Mason Mint was there, you know, that big candy factory.
I cannot find a picture of that. So if any of our listeners knows about what Tom and remembers what Tom is talking about, please tell us where we can get pictures. But it was the corner, I believe, of Glen Cove Road and Old Country Road.
Yeah, it wasn't quite on the corner. It was in a little bit, but it was right there. It was right across from Roosevelt Field. The railroad tracks ran behind it, so it was factories they would build them by the railroad so they could unload or whatever. So I lived, you know, I don't know, maybe a half or three quarters of a mile away down a railroad track. So we used to, as kids, we walked the tracks and go back behind Mason Mint and try and grab like a box of dots or something, you know, or a couple of mints. They used to have them out on the back. And they had this guy, Charlie, who was the security guard. We used to drive that guy crazy, you know. I mean, we were always trying to, you know, kind of boost the, you know, a thing of candy or whatever. And sometimes you did, you know, sometimes I remember one time we caught like a whole can. It was candies with defective boxes or whatever. They're throwing them out anyway, you know. We didn't know that. We were just, you know, larcenous little kids, you know what I mean? And, you know, one time we get this box of dots, you know, we thought it was dots. It was dots on top and it had the black crows underneath, the licorice ones. What a waste of, you know, like risking your life to get this stuff. You know, don't be like licorice when you're, you know, 7 or 8, 9 years old, whatever we were, you know.
It's funny. I was just going to say about the black crows. First of all, in today's crazy world, first of all, there's a rock band, the Black Crowes.
Yeah, sure.
And there was the candy, but I wonder if that's the next thing that's going to need to be the name changed. I don't think the candy exists anymore.
No, I don't. Mason Mint's out of business, I'm sure. You know, I haven't seen Mason Mint around in forever.
But I remember driving around and they had these huge, let's call them billboards, which were replicas of the different candy boxes.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And I have actually spent time on the internet trying to find images, and I've not been successful.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's certain things that, you know, I stopped in, you know, the Majestic Diner?
Yes.
I had a very hard laugh. I go there all the time when I'm in the area. I sit all the time, you know, three times a year, whatever. But that used to be a little silver diner called Libby's Diner. And Mr. Liberatos was Libby, you know, owned the diner. He lived right around the corner. And I went to school with his son, you know. So the diner was always part of my growing up period there. And I had an early morning paper route when I was a kid. And in January and February, it was really cold, you know, obviously in the morning. So I was halfway point on my paper route. And I used to stop in there. It was this woman. She was the kindest lady, but she was like Flo. She had the teased up hair and the eye makeup all the way to her ears. And, you know, it was just, she was, you know, the cartoon version of a diner waitress, you know. But she was very sweet. She always made me like a cup of hot chocolate and a buttered corn muffin or whatever on my way to the, I would thaw out and then go the rest of my route. So whenever I'm in the neighborhood, I stop in there when it's Majestic. So I stopped in last week and I don't know if I told you this last week, they had a menu. That was a paper menu. I guess they don't want people touching them, you know, like with the COVID thing, you know, you don't have the big menus anymore. So they just had a big sheet of paper, and it was about the size of a newspaper, like a regular, like Newsday would be about that size. And they had, you know, 4,000 things on the front, you know, an omelet every way you can possibly imagine with every vegetable and meat and cheese. You know how diners are. And then they had 100 ways to have a hamburger and a quesadillas. And then I flipped it over, and it was a whole other page of, you know, lunch stuff, this, that, and the other thing. And at the top in big letters, it said, limited diner menu. limited to what? 4,000 items? I mean, it was hilarious. But there's such a nostalgic trip when I go there, and I sit there and look out the window, and obviously the diner is all glassed up and gussied up now. It's much different than it used to be. So I'm talking to the waitress, and I'm explaining to her. I said, you know, I come here, paper route, the whole story. And she goes, you know, she just left here. The waitress, when I was a kid. It's like 50 years ago or whatever, right? And I'm like, you're kidding me. She goes, no, she finally retired. I said, what? She was working here 2 years ago? Yeah, she had to be 112, you know what I mean? Whatever she was, you know. It was great, you know. I really wish I had seen her, too, because I would love to just, as an adult, you know, sit her down and buy her breakfast and thank her for all the kindness, you know. It was and you know, that's, I think when you look at the world, you know, and aside from politics, but if you look at the world, you know, this one's fighting that one hates the other one. We can't have this, riots over here. Most people are just trying to raise their kids, feed their family, and get along. You know what I mean? The rest of us, you know, are all pretty cool with it. You know, it's the elites and the politicians and the leaders that are always, you know, arguing and fighting and fussing. The rest of us are fine. You know, just leave us alone, please. Oh God.
So I have two quandaries for you this week.
Oh no.
One is, again, I'm single with somebody, but single. And so I don't really.
This isn't cook. A sex question, is it?
No. Oh,
okay,
no,
good.
No.
Thank God.
You guys
have
through that before.
Yeah.
But I don't really do a lot of cooking for myself. So I usually find myself the beneficiary of take home food for
dining
people.
Room table surfing is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
So this past week, I ended up with two things. One is that, first of all, I didn't get my fill of corned beef and cabbage this year.
Oh, really?
I had meant to pick one up, and I didn't. And since then, people laugh at me when I go to the supermarket and ask for a corned beef.
Yeah, it's like trying to buy a turkey in, like, July, you know what I mean?
So, I mean, is that something that's really not in the meat department until St. Patrick's Day?
I don't know if it's never there, but here's an example. I have a friend who has maybe the most successful deli on the planet, and it's more than a deli. It's like a country store out in Amagansett, you know, my friend Dave. And he doesn't even buy corned beef anymore because nobody eats it. The only people who eat corned beef are people who go to Ben's, you know what I mean? Like me, you know? But it's kind of a, you know, unless it's in the, I mean, to me, I think of Ben's as like Jewish soul food. You know, I go there like once a month, you know, like Dawn of the Dead with my hands out in front of me, you know, like a robot, you know, because I get this pull for this Jewish soul food. And I actually don't eat corned beef. I usually have pastrami. I like it better, but I mean, I see, you know, corned beefs in the on the counter there, and they, you know, slicing them up like crazy, but I don't see it anywhere anymore other than Paddy's Day.
It's funny. Way back when, growing up, my dad worked on Canal Street, and then later on 14th Street in Manhattan, and there was it was always on a corner, but Smith's, and I don't know if they were all commonly owned or just a common name. But
yeah,
they would have. I believe it was corned beef and pastrami, but they would hand cut it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was nothing like getting a German corned beef or pastrami sandwich.
Totally.
It was still different than the Jewish thing, because the Jewish thing at this point is sliced on the slicing machine.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, my mind wanders to Katz's on the Lower
love
East
Katz's.
Side.
I love Katz's. But, you know, you order a sandwich and you got a meal for like 6 weeks. I mean, the thing is 15 inches high. It's crazy.
Right. Well, there's something to that, I think, from the economics of it, because if you sell a $5 sandwich, you know, you don't make a lot of money. But if you sell a $15 sandwich, it's another story. But talking about Katz real quick, if you go there, if you have to understand what it's all about. It's like a... It's self-serve. So you go up to the different counters,
right,
and you get your thing. But when you walk in, they give you a green ticket, just like the waitress would write up an order if she was sitting at a table. And you hand that to the server, and he writes what you got.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, if you try to leave the restaurant without that, you're in trouble because they won't let you out.
Oh, yeah,
and they got these big, burly security guards there. You know, I can only imagine what happens in the back room if you don't have your
seat. Well, yeah, they beat the corned beef out of you. I take it back.
So, at any rate, I had this yearning for corned beef, and fortunately, Kerry ended up, I guess, sandbagging one that she had from a couple of weeks ago and cooked it. So she sent me home with some corned beef and cabbage, which was nice. And then I blew it because I didn't have the right mustard that I wanted to have with it.
You are a picky dude. I got to tell you, mustard's mustard, right?
But well, you, no, there's... There, you You don't think there's a difference between, let's say, a Grey Poupon or a deli mustard or the yellow mustard?
I do think there's a difference. In fact, you know, the last chef that, you know, left the club where I was, I inherited like six different kinds of mustards. Like, what are you doing with all these, you know? I mean, there's grain and it's smooth for me. And yellow, I guess, you know, if you want a hot dog.
I like a grainy. The Grey Poupon is a little, I don't know if the word is tangy.
Yeah.
But I like a deli mustard, but a grainy one can be very... very tasteful.
Yeah, Grey Poupon, the Dijon mustards tend to be a little saltier than I think the others, you know.
So the other take-home plate that I received a couple of weeks ago, we had taken out from Rao's.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a pasta dish that was sausage, cabbage, pasta in a red, like arrabbiato sauce.
Arrabbiata?
Arrabbiata.
It's easy for you to say, Stu.
Yeah, well, obviously not. So Kerry recreated that, and I got to enjoy that, which was really, really great. Again, it was like a fusilli with crumbled sausage and the cabbage. And I didn't really understand cabbage with pasta. And then maybe it was the red sauce that I didn't understand. Then my mind started wandering, and I said, wow, a cabbage soup. Is really like tomato soup with cabbage in it, in a sense, in an abstract way. And then a stuffed cabbage is chopped meat wrapped in the cabbage and the tomato sauce. So
classic combo.
So I hear. And then in line with tomato sauce, I was speaking to somebody and we were talking about different commercial tomato sauces.
Right, right.
And, you know, they were saying that most of the stuff you get on the shelf just doesn't make it.
Yeah.
And we talked about Rao's, because I have a number of friends who have elderly Italian parents, and the only store-bought pasta sauce they'll use is Rao's for whatever reason. And then we started talking about some pasta sauces being sweet and this and that. And I didn't realize that in a lot of recipes, apparently, sugar is a part of making the tomato sauce.
That's an old wives' tale. I mean, you know, some people add sugar because they think it balances the acid in the tomatoes. I'm not one of them. You know, I don't understand why people buy bottled sauces because tomato sauce is probably the easiest thing in the world to make, and it's quick. You know, most people think you got to cook for hours like the Italian grandma. You don't. You know, basic tomato sauce, like a marinara, for me, is onions, garlic, basil, and tomatoes, period. Salt and pepper. See ya.
So all this week, The Godfather's been on the past couple of weeks, and Sonny gave his brother a quick
a tutorial.
Yeah, he said, you know, in case you have to, you know, cook for a table of 12 people or whatever.
Yeah.
So Sonny was teaching Michael what he has to do.
Yeah, well, that's what big
brothers
are
for.
And
it was just like you said. You throw a little this.
It's really not. It's just tomato and basil. I mean, salt and pepper and onions and garlic. I mean, that's it. You know, I can make tomato sauce in 10 minutes, you know. You know, by the time it takes you to, you know, open a can or a jar or whatever you're doing and, you know, heat it up, it's pretty much the same thing, you know. And I think that, you know, with the basic marinara, the least amount of time you have the heat on it, the better, because it changes the flavor of the tomatoes. Now, when you're doing, you know, brujol in there or you're doing meatballs or sausages, you're going to have to cook it a little longer. And some people pride themselves. I mean, my friend Dorio, Mike Dorio, you know, I make sauce. It takes him like 9 hours and he sees this tomato sauce. And, you know, it takes me like 55 minutes. I have the same thing pretty much, you know. But, you know, you want to labor over it. It's nostalgic. It's Italian soul food, you know. And each ethnicity has their own stuff like that, you know, which I find it infinitely interesting. But I'm in the food business, you know, what are you going to do? But, yeah, it's just... You know, there's so many things that I wander the supermarkets every once in a while when I forget to order something, you know. I'm not in there very often, but, you know, I forget to order anchovies or something else. I got to go looking. And I wander the aisles, and I'm amazed at how much convenience food there is, you know, as opposed to making your own. You know, jellies and jams. I mean, they're so easy to make.
It's pre-cooked spaghetti on the shelf now.
I know. It's nuts.
It's
you know?
In like a foil container. Talking about pasta, I'm fascinated by a new shape that I found. It's like a penne with like a floret at the end.
Really?
And somebody gave me a basket of Italian-type delicacies, and it was included in that. And then I was at Trader Joe's the other day, and they had the same thing. It's a cylindrical pasta, but at the end, it sort of burst out.
I've seen them. I don't know what they call them. You know.
Just interesting. It's a bulky pasta, and because of what you've taught me over the years— you know, I'm thinking that would be a great one to have with like a bolognese or a meat sauce.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's funny. A quick story. A friend of mine had a bar in Westbury called the Parkway Inn. We used to call it the Arkway Inn because the P was never lit up. You know, it broke the P years ago. And anyway, so it's where I spent an inordinate amount of my youth. And they had these. I used to attend bar there once a week on Sundays when I had a day off, and it was fun because I would be there anyway watching a game. So instead of spending $100, I made $100. It was, you know, worked out. And you know, you'd have just as much fun behind the bar. And it was there was an old man crew that used to hang out there, you know. And it was the only place I saw that I've ever been in, and I've been in plenty of bars where you know, the older crowd and the younger crowd was just kind of meshed. It was for about 7 years. It was perfect, you know. And you had poets and knaves and writers and business guys and Hell's Angels, and it was just this mix of people that was just incredible. Anyway, so they had these two guys who were always betting each other about something. So one guy said, I said, would you like another beer? No, I got to go home. I got the old lady's making dinner. You know, I'm like, all right, well, what are you having? He says, we're having Twist Eddies. And I said, what? Twist Eddies. He meant for silly, right? So the other guy says, there's no such thing as a Twist Eddie. He says, yes, it's Twist Eddie. That's not Twist Eddies. They're called Squiggolinis. You know what I mean? And I'm going back and forth. Bet me. They get a $20 bet. I get off at 5 o'clock. I had to take him to walking up the pasta aisle and Stop and Shop looking for Twist Eddies. I says, you two idiots. It's for silly. You know? What do you know? What do I know? Nothing. You know? And he walked up and down for about 10 minutes trying to find the Twist Eddies or the Squiggolinis. I almost wet my pants, you know? The bet was called off. Neither one of them was right, you know. Hilarious.
So we're in an interesting time on the calendar. Here we are in April, mid-April. Winter is over.
not today.
No, it is
morning.
Chilly, but and spring is almost here. Now, again, you're more of a person in the kitchen rather than the person, you know, growing the vegetables.
Yes.
But what's rule of thumb as far as putting your vegetable garden together?
You know, I should be more aware of this than I'm not. I don't know. I mean, I do know that there are some things that you plant, you know, 6 months before, 3 months before, 2 months before. You know, I would advise people to go on the computer and check that out. I don't want to give anybody some bad advice. I'm not a gardener. My daughter is. I mean, she has a big garden in my house out east, you know. I just never have time to tend to it anyway. You know, I'm always either going someplace or coming home, you know. And I know that the one thing I do know about gardening, ants love tomatoes. I didn't realize ants, they got to be Italian strain in there somewhere because they're just wild about tomatoes. Every tomato I ever grew had an ant on it or in it. But other than that, I really don't know much. I know right now you can start your herbs inside, you know, and then transplant them or transfer them, whatever the term is, outside. But aside from that, I really don't know. I mean, I know what grows in what season. I just don't know how to
get
it.
I think there's like an old wives' tale. You don't really plant stuff until after Mother's Day. And I guess Mother's Day is
beginning of May.
Early May.
Yeah, it's usually the second Sunday in May. But it's burned into my brain still.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are doing what you said, sort of growing stuff, you know, inside, and then we'll transplant it. But much in line with what you just said about the weather, I know I bought some shrubs recently, and because it was nice a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And when it's in the high 30s, I'm wondering if they're, you know,
they're going to make it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's got me a little concerned. I spent a little bit of money on some shrubs this year, and I don't want it to go down.
Yeah,
you know,
down the tubes.
Be wasted. But as I try to figure out what I'm going to plant this year, tomatoes obviously comes to mind, and there's so many different types. I know that when I go to the supermarket, plum tomatoes are usually the least expensive tomato.
With the least amount of flavor.
And being the cheapest guy around, many times it makes its way into my salad. But that's really more, I think you've said in the past, a sauce tomato.
Yeah, I roast them, you know, and I use them for sauces. I don't really use plum tomatoes for anything else, you know. Although believe it or not, I just got this party came across my desk. 50 people having a christening, and they want tea sandwiches. I need this like I need another tattoo, you know. But all right, you know, so let me try and have some fun with it. The great part about plum tomatoes is they're the perfect size for a tea sandwich. So if I'm going to do a little mini BLT, you know, round or mini, you know, sometimes I'll do prosciutto with tomato and basil, you know. It's the perfect size. You know, I can't get a beefsteak on there because it'll overlap the bread, you know. But other than that, you know, if you really want to use plum tomatoes and get the most out of them, I'll give you my secret. What I do is I'll serve them with, you know, like some type of mozzarella, whether it's burrata or buffalo or whatever. But I roast them very slowly in a very, very cooler oven. Like I'll take them, I'll cut the stem part off, you know, where the stem goes in. I'll just slice that off and I'll cut them in half lengthwise and lay them out on a sheet pan. And I season with salt, sugar, and fresh thyme and a little bit of EVO, extra virgin olive oil. And I'll put them in like a 225-degree oven for like 4 hours, sometimes 5 hours. You got to check them. And what happens is they slowly dehydrate. And as the water content leaves the tomato, the flavor content concentrates. It becomes almost like a raisin would be for a grape, you know. Oh. It's like it's the same principle as a sun-dried tomato, but you use in the oven instead of the sun, you know. I don't think too many people use the sun anymore anyway. It's, you know, take too long, you know. But if you slow roast them like that, you'll get this incredibly sweet, beautiful tomato flavor out of it. And so we serve them with, you know, with the mozzarella, or I'll put them in a salad. I'll use them. I'll cut them up. You know, I got to peel the skin off once it comes out of the oven. I'll cut them up and I'll use it as a fresh tomato sauce, sometimes as a topping. So they're very, very versatile that way. You know, on their own, you can keep them.
So I had this thought. You can tell me if I'm nuts, but it comes out of
you're
the
nuts.
Fact that, you know, I saw you eating a bagel before, and you've etched into my mindset that the greatest one of the greatest uses of a bagel is to toast it and have it with tuna fish.
Yeah.
So what about if
and
you...
It's a great doorstop the next day, too, if you ever need something to keep a door open.
Yeah, bagel doesn't last too
no,
long
it doesn't.
These days. But what happens if you sort of scoop out a plum tomato and you put like egg salad, or you put like a tomato salad in there?
You still have a tasteless
tuna fish.
You still have a tasteless tomato. You know, at the end of the day, you know, here's a great exercise for people who are interested, and I'm probably the only one who is. But you know, if there's another wacko out there who's interested in tomatoes as I am, buy a couple of store-bought tomatoes. Buy a beefsteak in a store. Buy a plum tomato in a store. And then go to a farm stand in July or August and buy a tomato out there. And then taste the two of them together. And you'll never buy another one in the store again without treating it.
That's what I was going to go to next. I know there's heirloom tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I like the color orange.
Right.
So I'll buy orange tomatoes. Do these different varieties of tomatoes actually have different... tastes?
They do. I don't think it's, you know, it's not like you can have a tomato tasting like a wine tasting, and they're not that different, you know. And if you close your eyes, it'd be hard to discern, I think, one from the other. But I just think that, you know, nature gives you this beauty, and let's use it. So, you know, when I do tomato salads in the summer, I'll get yellow, green zebra, I'll get red, I'll get the red with the purple, the German tomato. I can't remember the name of it now. But, you know, and I'll put like four or five of those together. And it just makes the plate burst with color. And, you know, you feel like a part of the season at that point. You feel like, hey, this is summer. How do I know? Well, corn is perfect. The basil's great. You know, tomatoes are killer. And I got lobster.
And you can have a really wonderful salad with just tomato.
Totally, totally. I mean, all the time.
Just like you, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, if it's thyme or
yeah.
And a nice olive oil.
Yeah, a perfect vinaigrette, either one, you know. You know, I like them both. You know, extra virgin olive oil. They have, you know, there's different levels of polyphenols in olive oils. So olive oil, you can definitely have a tasting. I mean, extra virgin olive oil comes, it's almost like wine. I mean, you can have a whole, you know, myriad of flavors. You know, some of it, you know, so if I get that scratchiness in your throat with olive oil sometimes, that's the polyphenol level is higher than the other. But I've had olive oils that I've matched with, you know, tomatoes and certain dishes. And believe it or not, I do a dessert that's olive oil with chocolate. So, you know, Italy, they make olive oil cakes. I've made olive oil ice cream. You can do a lot more than you think with almost everything out there.
There's so many, let's call it complex dressings, thick, heavy. I mean, you know, you have your Roqueforts and blue cheese and Thousand Island and stuff like that. But again, just olive oil can be incredible. And then when it's sometimes drizzled with a nice vinegar, again, the lightest, simplest dressing can just be, to me, the most delightful salad.
I don't use, personally, for me, I mean, I do make them because I know other people like them, but I don't use any mayonnaise-based dressings myself. It's always a vinegar and an oil thing. And I don't make all the silly ones that I consider silly. You know, French dressing that you see, that orangey stuff, real French dressing is oil and vinegar, believe it or not. that's a complete misnomer. It's like champagne from California, you know. But I don't really like the mayonnaise-y stuff. Sometimes I'll do a blue cheese dressing, but I make it thinner than everybody else, and I make it more with cream, sour cream, than mayonnaise, and it's more blue cheese.
It's funny when you talk about the French dressing, because French dressing is a very popular dressing. Then somehow I see on the shelf at the supermarket Catalina, which is sort of a diversion of that. But my favorite, is, and it's not always available, is what, Milani 1892?
I have no idea what
it's
you're
like a
about.
French dressing, but it just, to me, it's got this unique flavor, and I'm in love with it. It's hard, again, it's hard to find. Right now, Stop and Shop carries it, so I stay in stock. But again, I go back, just like you said, the simple, and for whatever, I know that the dressings that you serve your salads with at your various properties over the years. Again, there's just something about it that just...
It's the ratios, you know, and the ratios are important. You need... Most people don't realize that you need more acid than they think they need, especially when it's going on lettuces and stuff like that. You want that certain bite. Like, I'll do... I do a lot of fruit vinaigrettes, you know, like... That raspberry vinaigrette that you see in bottles, that's like, pass me the pistol, and I want to kill whoever came up with that idea. But
that be said, all these salads with, like, cranberry or tangerine or orange or whatever, are you a proponent of that? Or
yeah, sure. I think that, you know, any kind of, you know, like, I'll use, like, blood orange a lot, blood orange juice in my vinaigrettes. I'll do a blood orange.
How do you describe what the flavor of blood orange is?
It's just like the regular orange, only it's dark red, you know.
So there's no difference in taste?
Not really. I don't think it's a tremendous difference, you know. There's a difference in price, I can tell you that. But not in taste. But, we you know, I do a specific salad with a blood orange vinaigrette. And, you know, but I won't use the sweeter fruits, like, you know, lemon vinaigrette, grapefruit vinaigrette, orange vinaigrette, pineapple sometimes. The only sweet fruit that I'll use in a vinaigrette is, I do a caramelized fig vinaigrette sometimes in season, you know, because I like the way it tastes. But I use a lot of acid to back it up. You know, I'll use balsamic vinegar or something in there to kind of counteract the sweetness. The raspberry vinaigrettes that I've been forced to eat in certain places have that sickeningly sweet kind of, you know, you might as well be having dessert, you know. I think that salads, you know, I have a special reference for some. My mother, who was, you know, she's from Liverpool, you know what I mean? So, you know, try and find, you know, the great chefs of Liverpool cookbook around, you know. It's just, it wasn't there, right? And she got better as she got older, but she was a terrible cook because her mother was a terrible cook. I mean, she never really learned, you know. But she had this knack for salad dressing. She used to make this oil and vinegar dressing, and we always had salad every night with dinner. And it was just perfect. I don't know if she stumbled on it, if it was an accident, if she had a recipe, whatever. But it was the same every night. It was just killer, you know. And then I would go to my aunt's house, you know, her sister, who is equally bad a cook, you know. And she always had that wishbone Italian stuff, which was, you know, palatable to some degree. But it wasn't like my mom's, you know. And it was, I think that's what probably set me off on this, you know, vinaigrette thing, you know.
So I know everybody's so interested in what I like in a salad, but I cannot do well with celery, fresh celery, and carrots, like chunk. I like a crisp salad.
No, that's not crisp. That's molar breaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I find celery to be too stringy. It's just not my thing. Cooked celery, and you know, when my mom makes a roast or something, is divine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But or
divine,
even,
huh?
Yes.
Divine.
Well, you can use myriad.
I'm gonna steal.
Is that,
a
word you use today?
Myriad. Yeah.
Myriad.
Myriad. Yeah. That's because I'm educated. You're a romantic. You know.
I'm a romanticist.
That's it.
But I mean, I can do shaved carrot.
Yeah, yeah.
In a salad, but chunks of it again, it just.
Never occurs to me to do that. You know, there are things that, you know, I think, you know, tomatoes, cucumbers I like in salads, radishes I like in salads, you know, olives sometimes if it's appropriate, you know, Greek salad or whatever.
And then what's the right consistency of a breadcrumb? Of a
breadcrumb?
A crouton.
Oh, a crouton. I don't, you know, I guess it's got to be cooked all the way through. The problem with, you know, cooking bread all the way through is, you know, you can go from crouton to cement. You know,
well, that's where I'm.
Yeah. I mean, if you hear yourself chewing, that's probably too hard. You know, if the other table hears you chewing, it's definitely too hard. Yeah, I'm not a big crouton fan either. Crouton was, you know, it's just a way to use up bread that you would normally throw away. So I don't know if they belong in salads. I mean, they're expected in Caesar. Right? But I never put croutons in any other salad that I make.
Well, sometimes they get served. They're too hard. But we talked about flavors of tomatoes. What about lettuce? Is it a texture thing, or is there actually a difference in taste?
I think it's more texture than taste, but, you know, there is different taste. I mean, if you have arugula, you know, there's a bitter spiciness to arugula as opposed to, you know, iceberg, which is just water, you know, tastes like nothing. You know, mustard greens. I mean, there's interesting greens out there now that, you know, mescaline mix has a lot of that stuff in it. So you will get a different flavor than you would if you just did bib lettuce, you know, which is kind of a mild flavor. And I think there's use for all of it. Like I do a bib lettuce salad with blue cheese and pecans. It's kind of like a French thing, you know. And, you know, we use a vinaigrette on that, obviously, not a, you know, blue cheese salad. But the blue cheese is on the top, you know, it's sprinkled on or sprinkled in. And that lettuce works well for that. You know?
It almost is like a soft platter for
exactly.
The contents.
Yeah, we do. And I use it, you know, for the burger, for the onion, lettuce, pickle, tomato thing, you know, that everybody expects, you know. So I think, yeah, there's a big difference in flavors with different lettuces. I'm a big fan of arugula. I use it a lot because it has some punch to it, you know. It's got some moxie. It stands up in a salad and announces itself, you know, where, you know, iceberg, you know, I guess there's a use for it. I don't use it at all anymore, you know. Sometimes, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes when people ask me for a wedge salad or whatever, you know, I'll do that. But, you know, I just don't think it's interesting.
So you just said pickles. So something leads me to think about in the store, in the grocery store, they many times now sell these mini cucumbers.
Right.
It's like six or eight of them in
Kirby's,
Can you actually use those and pickle them?
That's what they use.
And do you need to put holes in the skin or anything?
You've got to leave them in a pickling solution for a while. It's, you know, it's sugar, water, pickling spice,
vinegar.
But
how long would something like that take?
You know, it can take up to 2 weeks, you know. I would think maybe even a little longer. You know, pickles are fun exercise to make at home, you know, because it's something the kids can do. And
I do remember that Carrie's daughter was up a sleepaway, and she came home with jars of pickles. That's one of the things they did.
Yeah, of course.
They made a brine
of
some sort.
Yeah, and you do the same with, you know, you can make quick pickles, too. You know, I mean, I'll pickle, you know, we pickle a lot. I pickle mustard seeds. I pickle red onions. You know, I use pickled red onions usually on my, on a roast. Like I'll do, not a roast, a braise, like a short rib or something like that. Because there's this such a rich fattiness in the short rib, you know, that that zing of pickling whatever, onions or whatever I'm going to put on top, gives it a contrast, you know,
so
cuts through.
You use red onion, you said?
I use red onion. Yeah, I do, primarily for the color. And sometimes I'll add a little grenadine in there just to make the red pop a little bit so it looks pretty on the plate, you know. You know, chef secret number 25A, you know. A little bit of grenadine goes a long way in the color department. It's like red dye, you know. It's like food coloring without the, you know, without the chemicals. So, but yeah, it's just, you know, again, it's just there's things that the average cook doesn't know that you can do with all foods, you know what I mean? And it's just, you know, if you want to explore a little bit as a home cook, you know, there's millions and millions of great recipes on the internet. I mean, if I had the internet when I was 9, I'd be a way better guitar player than I am now, you know, because I mean, the tutorials on food and music and building. And, you know, I remember watching Jean one time. She had to fix something on a computer and had no idea how to do it and looked it up on a computer and there it was. And she just did it herself. Well, I would add 7 technicians in there. You know what I mean? It's just the amount of information is just priceless now, you know? So if you see or if you get an idea because I'm yapping about it or you see it in a newspaper or a magazine or something, go investigate it. There's all kinds of, you know, how-tos, you know, that you don't need an instruction. You don't need a cooking demo. I mean, you got it right there at the tip of your fingers. It's just,
so here's another interesting interaction that we can have. If you have a cooking quandary and you want to get it answered, send us a note at
sure.
playingwithfire@playingwithfire.com, and Tom, within the Six week
months.
Of receiving it, will respond, or we'll talk about it on the show
and
be able to help you through your inquiry.
Absolutely. And you know, I get 911 calls all the time. You know, Dorio calls me all the time. I get a culinary 911, you know. I get this panic call. I'm in the middle of this. What do I do? And you talk him through it, you know, and he's like, oh, great. Thank you.
Well,
you know?
I'll always remember that. I guess we had a yearning for some, like, really nice lobster one summer, Carrie and I, and we had a couple of couples coming over, and I splurged. Well, I actually didn't splurge.
Yeah, you're the cheapest guy you know, right?
Yeah. Well, I sort of miscalculated what the cost of things were,
you
know.
Go,
so
yeah.
I went to the local mall. It must have been Fresh Foods or something, and I got these, like, 2-pound lobsters, or maybe they were even larger, and they were steamed, and I miscalculated, and $200 later,
oh boy.
I had all these lobsters, and I didn't know what to do with them. So I quickly called you, and you explained to me that my cooler could be used as a cooler or the means by which to maintain
the heat
of the steamed lobsters. And then you went through a tutorial of what to do on the grill with my lobsters when it was time to eat.
Yeah, I'm happy to, you know, listen, I started cooking in 1968, right, in a restaurant. And so I don't know what the math is. It's 23 years or 53 years or whatever it is. And so I've still never lost that little boy wonder about what's out there in the culinary world, you know, the ingredients, the combinations, the, you know, the pure joy that it gives to people, because eating is a bonding experience. You know, everybody's around a table. I mean, you know, if everybody would share more meals, there'd be less wars, you know what I mean? Because we all have something interesting to kind of say and prepare and whatever, you know. I just never lost it. I'm still as excited about going into work today as I was when I was a kid. And it was the first thing that I found that you know, I had, that held my interest, that, you know, that gave me some sense of worth and, you know, whatever. And it's never left. It's so, I'm so excited about it still that I love to share the information. I have a fairly large, you know, amount of information after 53 years at 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know, so I have a lot of time in and, you know, happy to impart that knowledge to anybody who's interested. And I just think that if you look at this subject for what it is, it's like, you know, most people, you look at music, and music is this, you know, so my favorite song, my radio station, whatever. But if you look at music itself, it's endless. I mean, the combinations, the notes, the scales, it's this huge, you know, subject. And some people explore it more than others. There's Steve Vai or, you know, Chopin or, you know, Beethoven, you know. And then there's Tom on the lower end, you know. But it's the same thing with cooking. I mean, you know, most people just scratch the surface and they cook to eat and eat to live or whatever. But there's other people who live to eat. And that's my group, you know, who I'm always interested in talking to because, you know, it's fun subject. You need it every day. It can be way more cool than it is to the average person if they just take a little interest, you know.
So we've talked about a lot of different things today, and we just talked about, you know, if you have any questions or tips you want to get from Tom, send us a message at fire@whli.com. During this past week, I had a conversation with somebody that enjoys the show, and her name's Meredith, and she was saying, we got to talking about cauliflower, which isn't necessarily the tastiest vegetable, right?
No, it's not.
So we were talking about cauliflower soup. So now, is cauliflower soup more about the like the soup part of it, or do you does the cauliflower actually add to it? And could you, while we're talking about it, tell us how to make cauliflower soup?
Yeah, it's easy. In France, they call it crème du Barry. And I think they named it that because cauliflower soup just doesn't sell. You know what I mean? It's crème du Barry. Ooh, that's, you know, that's the French for you. You know, they're innovative that way. Yeah, it's just basically, you know, when I make cauliflower soup, and I do it fairly often in the fall because it's a good soup and it's flavorful. You know, I use chicken stock, obviously. It's not all vegetarian. You can use vegetable stock or water. But it's basically just I saute celery, onions down, the cauliflower down, add the chicken stock, you know, and then puree it all. You know, I usually use fresh thyme in there or something like that.
And you do puree it.
I puree it all, you know, and then add a little cream at the end or not, you know, depending on, you know, how caloric I want
to
make
it. To puree, do you need a food processor? Can you use a blender?
You can use a blender, yeah, but you don't puree it when it's hot because, you know, if you're not holding the top down, you'll have it all over the ceiling. You know, it just the heat expands. So you got to cool it down before you, you know, I don't do that because I know how to handle it. You know, you almost have to stand on the blender to keep it in there, you know. But, you know, if you let it cool completely, you can blend it and then you got it.
So you got the broth, you got the puree. Usually is it a cream base?
It can be, yeah. Or you can just use the cauliflower as a thickener and then you no cream. So if you want to be a little more health conscious, then you don't add the cream. I'm more about texture, flavor, and presentation. So I do use a little cream in mine most of the time. I think it just mellows it out a little bit and it, you know, gives it a kind of a different kind of mouthfeel. But that's a professional decision, you know what I mean?
So is there any technique that, like, if you have chunks of cauliflower, but not hard. I mean, if they're like
cooked, yeah.
Yeah, if it's soft, then is that an interesting
Yeah, I think you
take
can
on it?
Garnish it, the top of it with that. You know, I think, you know, save a little cauliflower florets and, you know, you can use a little garnish on top of the soup. It's good.
So in today's world of cheating, because everybody cheats, but I guess one of the newest things that you find in the in the frozen vegetable department is riced cauliflower.
Yeah.
Can you use that to make the cauliflower soup?
Sure, yeah. Any kind of cauliflower is fine. It has the same flavor. It's just how it's processed, that's all.
And then the colors are just colors.
Yeah, colors are colors. Yeah, I wouldn't use purple in my cauliflower soup because it's going to make it look dirty, you know?
Really?
The color, yeah. But anyway, we have to go on that note. So I guess we'll close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life as we normally do.
Do you think that's why the producer or the engineer left the room?
I think so. I think he just gave up. Tom's Three Keys to Life are: life is too short to drink bad wine, treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate as important in your life as sex and pizza.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.